Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. We are continuing our look into the 2017 and 2018 seasons and, frankly, the general future of IndyCar. This episode, we have IndyCar CEO Mark Miles, the man in charge of the whole thing. Spent about 45, 50 or so minutes with Mark during the recent IndyCar test at Phoenix. Really insightful. Don't get a chance to speak with Mark as much as I would like to. Was there with my racer colleague Robin Miller, thankfully, because we haven't had a chance to catch up for a little while. Mark sat down and spent plenty of time with us, jumped across a lot of things. Actually going to spin a number of these items out into smaller written features on Racer, so you don't have to try and remember everything you hear. Nonetheless, we got through the costs of what it takes to be an IndyCar engine manufacturer, some of those costs. Looked at some of the social media enhancements that IndyCar is doing, trying to grow their presence through social media with their drivers. Next TV deal and general thoughts on what Mark would like to see in terms of evolution and improvements on the TV and just general product reach through their televised content. Air kit cost reductions is something that we got into a little bit. Looked at the age and demographics of the average IndyCar fan and IndyCar's efforts to reduce the age. Not necessarily reduce the number of fans, but definitely continue to court a younger demographic. Spoke about the 101st Indy 500 coming up in May, how that's doing in terms of sales, obviously coming off of the huge sold-out 100th anniversary last year. Robin, one of his particular concerns, double points, and how he would like to see those go away. So he and Mark got into that a little bit. So altogether, swept across a lot of interesting topics. Mark is a very smart guy with a very strong ability to look at the big picture and work towards a lot of improvements over many years with a lot of interlinked things going on. So got into the things that the big items left to fix, the stuff that he's happy with, some of the stuff that he isn't happy with. So altogether, hopefully you get a chance to know Mark a little bit better, and also with his help, get a feel for what he is trying to do with the IndyCar series in the years ahead. We are now past 115 episodes on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Get all those on iTunes, your favorite podcast aggregator, and on our new Marshall Pruitt Facebook page. So with that little promo out of the way, off we go with myself, Robin Miller, and IndyCar CEO Mark Miles.
A fan said the other day, "Miller, you're always talking about the good old days." And I looked, and sometimes the guy won the race by two laps, and there was only six cars finish the race, and why don't you think this is why isn't this the good old days? Well, from the standpoint of competition and depth, it's never been better. So when you are faced with, if you have to replace Verizon, or if you're going to add somebody else, and I think I sent you that last email, now that NASCAR's lost their mind and gone to this, I mean, it's like they're, I don't know what they're trying to do, but IndyCar is still the, with the exception of a couple things, the most pure racing on the planet. When you go to get a sponsor or something, that's what you have to pitch with the TV deal or whatever.
Well, I think we have the best racing, the most exciting racing, and that's pure. Certainly part of our pitch. Pure means something to purists, but when you're trying to grow the sport, I don't know that that's a word that that rings their bell. For me, it's that it's exciting and it's going to come down to the wire, and there's depth and there's all the stories of, you know, the behemoth teams and the Cinderellas and young folks and champions. So we got all that, but in the end, it's also about whether we can get more people to watch it. And that's where the increase in television audience, we've doubled. I mean, we acknowledge that we start in all these metrics with a small base.
Yeah.
But in 3 years, we've also more than doubled our digital media numbers, and everybody's growing those, not everybody's growing television ratings. So, you know, we have for at least 3 years grown the audience. We're also talking about the tracks themselves. If you think back to last year, at least three tracks set their records, and one of them is Long Beach. You break a attendance record in Long Beach, yeah, you're doing something. I think six probably were close to their records. They were certainly better than the year before. We had two rained-out events, but by and large, the attendance isn't perfect, and it doesn't always look great at some of our ovals, but attendance has grown. So all the fan metrics are improving, and that's how we'll sell.
When you moved into this role, you probably had 432 different bullet points of things you wanted to change, improve, fix, alter, consider. Where are you at from when you were first tasked with turning IndyCar around? And around from something that was there, ongoing, but not really thriving. Where do you feel you're at personally in steering this long-term plan to go from a bit of stagnation to actual, you know, bit vivacious quality, good feel, good growth? Feels like we're getting to where IndyCar needs to be, but do you feel that? Do you see that yet?
I think we're making progress. So the thing that I think has been most important is that we've got a better quality team. You can have 200 or 400 things you want to do, but if you can't execute, they're a list on a piece of paper. And I think we're not nearly, I mean, we'll never be there.
Sure, sure.
But I think we're in a lot better shape on, as we say, both sides of the street. So that's not lost on the stakeholders. And we just had an owners meeting today, and there were a couple owners themselves who were represented but not there, but otherwise everybody was there.
I heard no fistfights broke out this time. That's good.
Well, it was more than that. I mean, it's there's an understanding of what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. They understand that we will always take their interest into account in a meaningful way, as much as we can. And, you know, I think if you think back to when we started, you couldn't even get to executing because there was... I don't know if it was chaotic, but it was certainly insecure, and there were a lot of questions about the viability of the sport. So I think we hit the most important thing we've done is try to put a better team in place, and I think they're performing.
So, you've got the trust of the paddock for the first time in a long time, because they feel like they have a voice, and that comes from mechanics and team managers. They voluntarily say, you know, Jay listens to us, Mark listens to us. But I think the other thing is you've let your you've let Jay do his thing, and he's let Tino and Bill Pappas, and they've worked as a team, and they, you know, I mean, sure, there's still things that need to be fixed, but it's the racing side of it is as good as it's ever been.
It's been good, though, for that same period of time. You know, that was never anybody's first problem.
Right.
It was our greatest asset.
Yeah.
So you can argue about whether you'd like it to be completely open or completely spec, and we're somewhere, not even in the middle, right, in between. But it's great racing. It's a great sport, and it's always been undervalued in the market. Or not always, but of late, it's been undervalued in the marketplace. And we couldn't just turn that around by talking about it. You had to show more people want to watch it.
Where are you on the items that you want to fix, whether they're showing progress, be it TV numbers or overall investment in the paddock by sponsors? I know that we are seeing a lot of good things happening, but I know that you're not someone who tends to get too caught up in the, yay, tell me about all the positives, give me the things that either aren't working or need more fixing, and let's focus our energies there. What are those items that you're seeing that you're really diving into?
Well, before I give you a list, motorsports has some headwinds, at least in this country, maybe everywhere. And I think that makes our story more compelling, because we're at least directionally outperforming. I think we're the fastest growing motorsport, at least in the States. And fastest growing is better than sitting still or headed south. So we've got something to talk about. I hate to give you my list of things to fix, because then I'm talking about the negatives, but I think we can do a much better job of telling our story to you all, to the what we call earned media. I think we've gotten better, and I think we're better as marketers, but that's not the same as communication. So, look, that's not free, because you got to have staff to execute, but there's a lot of leverage in the investment in competent communication staff for the return that you get. So that we're not satisfied with. We made some changes. We got a lot more work to do. High on my list of things now are to renegotiate our media rights. So you know that they go through 18, and all of the existing agreements have back-end rights, as they're called, that provide for FNFRs and the things that were previously agreed to in the process of making new arrangements. So we've got great New York legal counsel who do this. Nobody better to help us negotiate through that minefield. And we've got great television consultants in BHV, Bevilacqua, Helfand Ventures. And we are in the stage now where we are talking to everybody but not negotiating with anybody. We're just trying to understand appetites, perspectives on the sport with anybody who might be either a linear or over-the-top broadcaster or player.
If you can't get everything on one channel, which probably would be ideal, we've talked about this before, can you negotiate your way into having IndyCar on two networks? Is that seems to me the big, you know, could NBC be allowed to show four races on their network? Because right now they can't.
Anything's possible, and we're not we really aren't negotiating now. So, but anything's possible. If I had to say today, I think the most likely result is one broadcast partner, but I don't know that.
You'd like that?
I like it if it comes with a lot of network coverage, more than we've got today.
Right.
So our highest priority in these discussions is audience, not dollars are next. I would say a close second, but next.
Sure.
And I think we got great interest. I think ESPN for ABC and ESPN and NBC for NBC Sports Network are all interested, and I think there may be others. And that's for the linear guys in the States. The fascinating dynamic is the powerful emergence of the internet guys. So Amazon TV announcing they're into live sports now. And they are, and they like motorsports. So you can't simply sit in a room like this and say, well, we'll sell this way and this way. You got to see all the details from everybody so you can piece it together in the best way. And I think that live digital rights to somebody other than our broadcasters in the States in the next deal will be difficult because the traditional broadcasters aren't ready to give it up. But the beauty of that sort of arrangement, of those technologies, is that you can geocode, and it could be a huge increase in what gets done and how young we move out of the country, out of the U.S., for example. So there's just a lot of moving parts, and I think there's opportunity in the quickly changing dynamics.
I've told you this, and I've written it, and we've said it. How, to me, besides you're putting the TV package together and moving that forward, how do you get more corners? We're down to 8 teams and 21 cars. How do you get people? What kind of incentive can you give people? Because you've got to have more owners and maybe more young owners.
So I hope in the next short period of time we'll be announcing another owner and a young owner. It won't be for the full series immediately, but it's a serious motorsports entrant that will race, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 races next year, and that's a start. And I think it's a pretty good model. Somebody that is in the sport, loves it, is a good operator, you know, grows thoughtfully into a full-time serious team.
Could you help the Bilardis and the Carlins? Can you say, look, we'll give you an engine for a year, we'll give you a chassis for we get you started? Can you do that?
We can, and we are not insensitive to helping, but those are on the margins. I mean, they got to put together 6, 7, 8, 10 million bucks, and an engine, everything helps. So those are, I haven't seen that as the real gap closer to get a full-time ride. The other things we can do besides just being out there is make the series more popular and be able to put more cash into the leader circle for the full-time rides. And frankly, that gets me to back to your list. So communications, better licensing agreements, which give us better exposure. And for us, international races at the beginning of the year still matter. The first thing to know is we're talking about February. You know this. We're talking about a limited number, I think maybe two, someday. And we believe that that market will allow us to pay the teams more. And we've told the teams if we get what we're looking for in the marketplace, it'll be $200,000 a car per race. And then subsidized, if not completely subsidized, logistical expense. So if we got two of those and you move from a little under $1 million to $1.4 million, that's not insignificant for all the teams, especially a two or three or four car team.
It's just tough though if somebody comes in new, they're not in the leader's circle, and they and the purse money's not good enough to keep them going, so they've got to be something for them.
Yeah, well, we could always add them. I mean, right. You know, I think we'll do what we have to do when we've got somebody that, that just needs some help. But making the sport, make it easier for them to sell, to provide the financial foundation, and then closing gaps. I think a third OEM is important for lots of reasons. That's among them. I think you bring a third engine manufacturer in. Look, from the time I've been involved, I'm sure before, there's always a conversation with one or more of them. And I think we are at a point now with one of them that seems more promising than we further and more appointed than we've had before. And if we got something done in the first half of this year, you still wouldn't see them probably till 19. But if a third car a manufacturer comes along and takes maybe not even a third of the field, that would be really helpful in bringing in a new team, I believe.
As much as I would love to have a third manufacturer from a participation standpoint, I would be more enthused by the potential marketing impact and buys and promotional help they would support. Because if we look back to the days when CART was its most popular and its grandstands were most full, it's because you had multiple top 50, top 100 companies involved preaching, activating,
sure,
promoting, buying tickets.
True for any sport.
Yeah.
Your sponsors have to activate in the marketplace in a way that really moves the needle on the sport. I don't know a sport that can just write the checks to do that for very long on their own account. So you're right. And by the way, before you get to the marketing spend, the cost to be a third manufacturer is not bad, because they do get, you know, lease payments from the teams. There's a development cost. They can use a company like Cosworth to badge an engine, and they can get in for an upfront payment, but then the annual ongoing cost is not, I don't think anybody in this room would think that it was a big, big hurdle. What we want, of course, is not just that they come in, but that they're doing it because they really want to activate and help promote the sport and their association with it.
If you're talking to manufacturers about doing this, about coming in, and they're obviously asking, what general range are you saying, all right, to ramp up, to start this project, get a pool of motors built and get into the series, is that a 5 million, 10 million? I mean, is this a scary number, not scary number, to at least get in, at least get started before those leases start paying back?
There's an upfront payment that somebody would have to, it depends on everything. Are they going to work with a Cosworth?
Sure.
Or are they going to develop an engine themselves? I don't know the number. If they got to do it themselves, it would depend on who they are, but that'd be a really big number. If they're going to do it through somebody who's got all the pieces pretty much ready to go, the upfront number is 20 million bucks or so, 15, 20 or so. But then the annual operating cost, which is my earlier point, is a few million bucks in that before you get to activation, just to supply the teams, have the presence provide the support for the teams. And in my mind, for a car manufacturer, 2-3 million bucks as the fixed cost, if you want to think
sure
of that way, on an ongoing basis, is just not that big a number.
Piggybacking on that, one of the criticisms possible, I don't know if it's so much of a criticism, but of the manufacturers that we have in the series, looks like they spend more than the other, just in terms of TV advertising, event sponsorship, the activating side. Of the concerns I've heard, it's that the costs to field our overall effort between the engine, the aero kits, the R&D, the everything else, that costs us enough that we'd love to spend more and have more commercials and more, you name it, but the competition side makes us pull back a little bit. Do you think that's valid?
Well,
and is there a way to
balance
that?
I think it's to the extent that it had validity, it was valid until we went to single arrow kit. I mean, the amount of money that each of them was spending for the arrow competition was a serious, what was that? Seven, eight.
Insane.
Serious eight-figure a year each number.
Yeah.
And that's gone after this year. So you pick a number. Let's say you said $20 million a year somebody might have been spending, or 15, and it literally went away. It's the same program. So I think there should be money there if the overall program is funded at about the same level.
Okay, we get the purest badass racing, baddest form of racing in this country on four wheels. We don't need double points to qualify at Indy and double points at Sonoma, and you and I have had this discussion. Is it something you'll look at maybe? I mean, I think, as we talked about, your commercial is, we don't have a lucky dog or a caution clock or a green-white checker. Our fans are the lucky dogs because they get to watch the best racing in the world.
Yeah.
And it's pure. You know, we have push to pass. That's our only gimmick. We don't need gimmicks. Especially
and push to pass is mechanical and is engineering.
Right. But as far as
it's tactical too.
Sonoma, you know, you finish three stars.
I understand. So let me just tell you how I feel about it again. And from time to time, including this week, we look at the numbers to say, if we did this, what would that mean, or what would it have meant historically in terms of the way the championship ended and developed over the course of a year. We don't want to be artificial. We want to be pure, as you put it. But with respect to Indianapolis, and I'm a series guy, right? I mean, that's really how I feel about it. Indianapolis's role is to grow the series. But it is the most meaningful event by some big factor.
Fine. Double points at Indy's fine.
Right.
Just not qualifying. Who cares? And Sonoma.
So I don't think too many people do care one way or another about that, but I get the point. So one might run the numbers to say, well, what if it was just double for the race and not double? Then what would that do to us? So we're never going to not be looking. But let's talk about the year end. So it's not the 500, but it is the finale. And people may not want to hear this, but we do know that now that we're racing on Labor Day and 2 weeks later, those television ratings are down. They're going down. What would happen if the championship was over before we get to September? A purist would say, well, that's just the way it worked out. Somebody clinched it before we got to September, so fine. But I don't want to have nothing to talk about for the last two races of the year. We need the ongoing narrative of the race. So it is artificial by a purist standards, I understand that. But for me to say, look, there needs to be more at stake at the finale.
Okay.
And it's the same for everybody.
But
it has mathematically kept the race alive in a way that would not have been the case longer.
But only two out of the last 10 years, because you guys have always come down to the last, even before this happened, it was always decided at Fontana because the racism was so good. So let's just say this. Let's say you still keep that theory. You just go to an oval for your last race. You need something exciting for your last race. You don't need Sonoma. And they do a great job of promoting. Marshall,
my home track. Thanks, Miller.
They do a great job of promoting.
Banned for life.
You got to have something that's going to go, wow. Like, even if it was Gateway or something, an oval, there's the element of unknown at any oval you go to. Sonoma, not so much.
In the middle of September.
Gateway might be.
If Gateway works, but let's have our first one.
I know.
I've always proposed double points at every round, but no one will listen to me.
Yeah. All right.
At every round.
Are you smarter 5 years into this deal? What have you learned?
Oh, I'm probably dumber, but I think I've learned more.
Well,
about
you're talking
racing.
To us, are so you, we know you're dumber.
Do you like it? Do you like your job?
Oh,
do you
yeah.
like racing?
I do like racing, and I really like the people. First of all, the racing's exciting, and having a infinitely more in-depth understanding why it's exciting and what goes into it, and the passion that the competitors at every level, you know, from the guy who goes over the wall through the driver, as for it, and the expertise that goes into it. I mean, it's really complicated. So there's depth there that I now have a much greater appreciation for. And it's exciting as it can possibly be. So yeah, I really like the sport, and I really like the people, and I like the passion. And I thought from the first day I think I got acquainted with folks, hey, this gang wants to win, not just individually, but as a sport. I love working with them, the paddock, to try to pull them together to be in sync on a direction, and I feel like we've made some progress.
So you don't think the owners are a bag of snakes every time you reach your hand, and it's not a bag of snakes?
You know, y'all tried to convince me of that on my first day, and I never felt it. Stakeholders have a right and probably an obligation to be bonkers if the train's about to wreck. But that, to me, doesn't mean they're bad people or that they don't have the enterprise's interest. And I've never been a person who, if Robin Miller and I disagree, that doesn't mean Robin Miller's a bad guy.
He was before you disagreed, so that part was fun.
I want to know what people think, and then we got to make our decisions with all the right, understanding. And if you make more good ones than bad ones, people will follow.
What can you tell us about today's IndyCar fan? One of the big takeaways from the Boston Consulting exploration, if I remember correctly, was at that point, whatever that was, 3, 4, 5 years ago, the average IndyCar fan looked a lot like us, older white
or
male,
me.
50,
you're older than me.
50 plus white male.
No.
Okay, even higher, which tells you right off the bat, your biggest fans aren't long for the planet. You obviously and the rest of your team said, okay, we need to definitely embrace youth. Has that been successful so far? Have you seen those numbers come down in any meaningful way? Where is that at?
Up. We're not looking for any number to come down. We're looking for the young number to come up.
Fair enough.
No, we haven't yet. We have continued to mature. It's less so at the track than it is on television. Younger people tend to get out, and so we're a little younger, but it's an issue. And couple things. One, CJ's group did some, I think, really quality research, which told us what we would have hoped to hear, which is that we can appeal to younger people that people think don't give a damn about cars, and they can still like this sport. And we can do it in a way that doesn't, in terms of the substance and the sport itself, that doesn't put off the hardcore fan, the older fan. So that's good news, because you don't want to be having to figure out how to divide them. The content, for heaven's sakes, the sport itself. What we're doing now is a few things, but one of them is the marketing dollars are getting shifted. So there's less on traditional broadcast, not that it's a big number anyway, and more on digital. And we are investing in our digital staff and operations. I sat in one of the components of the meeting today, which I thought was really, really good, was CJ's presentation to the team owners about how we're working with the drivers to increase their social engagement, which is, it's free practically. And by the way, they can sell it. I mean, it's like a sponsorship space on a car. It is a valuable, liquid, sellable exposure. So CJ can take you through that, but there's a lot of good work that's gone into a system that we've licensed from somebody else to measure each driver's social value. So it's about the size of the audience, the kind of quality of the conversation, which is retweets and the like, and then the tenor of the conversation, and you can put numbers to that. And so the good news was that I would have said 4, but Montoya was one of them. 3 of our full-time drivers are in the top 15 compared to NASCAR guys. So there's a start. And we know how to get those numbers up. And you don't have to be the winningest guy on the circuit, on the series, to get your numbers up if you put the effort into it. So the first thing is the teaching of that. And we've had these conversations with all the drivers in January, I guess, in Indy. And now we have some technology, which he should explain, which makes it really easy for them to provide better content on their in their social engagement. So, for example, when a guy finishes a practice session, he gets from us a video snippet that is packaged on an app that he can like or not, I mean, want to use or not.
Sure.
And tweak or not, and it's like push send. But it's his. It's not generic stuff. So we're focused on trying to help them get better. And in the conversation with the owners, the first question we got was a thank you. And then the question was, well, what about for the teams? Well, yeah, teams should be doing it too. So this isn't astrophysics for marketers all over the world, but it is to us. And it's the kind of thing that will absolutely lower the fan demo age-wise.
Following that, we aren't too far away from some of our most popular drivers retiring, right? We lost Montoya as on a full-time basis. We know how popular he was. Kanaan has another year or two. Elio, year or two. Some of the biggest names into their 40s. We're not too far away from a sea change where we would hope a Joseph Newgarden, Alexander Rossi, some of the young crop can take that baton. Do you see IndyCar as having to play a role in becoming star makers?
Sure. We can't do enough.
How organic?
With or without transitions and succession plans.
But how, because some of what we've seen is organic. You know, the guys who are rising in popularity, but it's been a while since you can win the Indy 500 and become a national star. I would think that would be one of the, I don't know, pressing concerns, but something where you realize that we're going to need to make some new stars to keep this trend going.
Well, racing fans don't want to hear this, but I saw Becker and Borg and McEnroe and, you know, icons of the tennis sport retire, and you missed them forever. But new stars came along. And that's not just a law of nature, although it tends to happen when guys come along and win. But then there are the things you can do to propel them. And so the social media work that we just talked about is an example of that. And it seems clear, although Montoya is an exception, and is so is Elio. But anyway, the younger guys tend to gravitate to the social conversations more quickly. Having said that, actually our top guys are older.
Kanaan's, he has an amazing following.
And so is Elio.
Yeah.
And I think it was Joseph that was with Montoya in our top four.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's the younger guys will have to win and have to make a name for themselves and have to go do things like Dancing with the Stars, and then broadcasters, you all will be talking about them more, and we're going to give them tools and help them with the tools to further insert themselves in the national conversations.
We need to let Mr. Miles go there in a moment.
That's good stuff. He didn't use the F word one time.
Well, it's on.
Stuff about Hitler was a bit of a surprise, but no cursing. That was good.
That was good.
Maybe one last question. So we had an amazing 100th Indy 500, and so the natural wake-up Monday morning is, well, how are we going to repeat that for the 101st, 102nd? How are things going? Is there the anticipated slight drop-off because you don't have that centennial aspect to promote, or have things been healthy?
Well, I don't know if it resonates, but we say internally the 101st ought to be more historic than the 100th. It's one more year, and it makes us that much more venerable. But the answer to your question is it's encouraging. So I think we have one suite left. I don't think we have any of the new Holman Terrace club seats left. Based on that, I think we could end up building temporary suites again. The ticket sales are well above 50% greater than they were in 15. So they're not at 16, but they're not far off so far.
You know how I go? I go on and I see, can I buy? People send a letter to the mailbag and say, I've never been, I want to go, where should I sit? Yeah, I said, you want to sit in the corners. So I'll go look for them. Southwest Vista, Southeast Vista, Northwest Vista. You can get you can still get in row U maybe in one of them, and the others are M. And so it's not, in the old days, like you said, 14, 15, you could get double letters all the way up till April.
Yeah.
So it is better than I thought it would be.
No, it's meaningfully better. You know, as a business matter, you got to figure out what your budgets are. And you you got to match to some extent expenses to revenue. So what are you going to budget for, say, ticket sales for the 101st? Well, let's pick not as a goal, but as a minimum budgetary expectation, keeping 50% of the lift from 15 to 16. And we're well above that. So it's going to be good. And, you know, people said to me, you probably said to me, well, you know, I know a lot of people who are just trying to make it to 100, then they're done. So it's a little bit like the question about our veteran stars about to retire, but people are taking their place. I think the great thing about the 100th was a bunch of people came back that, you know, taken a vacation from coming to the 500, and a whole bunch of people came for the first time, and I think most of them had a great time. That event, if you can get them there, sells itself.
And that was IndyCar CEO Mark Miles and Robin Miller and myself at Phoenix here, getting ready for the 2017 Verizon IndyCar Series season to kick off in St. Petersburg. Looking forward to that. We're going to try and do more of this throughout the year. I'm speaking with those who are in charge of the series, those who shape its policy, its direction, just the product that we have. Try and let them speak a little bit more directly with you so you can hear what they're thinking, what is or isn't working, and what they believe is needed to make this series as popular as it once was. If that is possible, or at least get it as close as they can. So, again, all of our episodes on iTunes, on our new Marshall Pruitt Facebook page. And with that, as always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.